Welcome back to our Purple and Gold Point After Show. Mike Dettillo along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Orchard House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. If you're in the area, stop on by. They got all kind of food and drink specials here at Acme. Also, if you want to win some Acme, say, swag, and they give away some gift cards, come on by. You can fill it in. It's almost like a little tip jar right in front of us.
That's
that
right.
You can fill in your name and the telephone number, and they'll pull it after the show for the giveaways. We also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Map Built, Build Beyond. Herb on the defensive side, the football for LSU in their 36-33 victory, which ended on a missed field goal by South Carolina. Again, we see a lot of missed tackles by LSU. It doesn't matter if it's up front along the defensive line, linebacker, or in the secondary, a lot of missed tackles. But if you want a game that you want to send the scouts, Braden Swenson had it today. Three sacks. And, man, he was a problem coming off the edge. Now, some of that, too, and I got to give credit where credit's due. Harold Perkins set up a couple of those.
He sure did.
You could see the blocking scheme trying to figure out where he was going to come from, and it freed up Braden.
That's right. Swenson had a fantastic game. Can't take anything away from that. What that means to me is the fact that now the film that he's put on tape today, you know, offenses got, they have to be mindful
of that.
You're
going to have to adjust to it.
So that's going to help Harold Perkins in the long run, as well as everybody else on defense. But what I like the way that how Swenson played was the fact that he played aggressive and he played hard.
Yes.
And he played with a little tenacity. He played with that dog in him, and I like that. And the other thing, too, is when you go back and look at the film from today, you talked about the missed tackles, and they came from pretty much everywhere. It was almost like, man, that was a big man coming downhill. Do I really want to be a part of that? Some of those were some business decisions, as you say.
it's always a business decision.
There you go. And some of it was just flat out, just they just didn't perform and make the play. But what I will say is we gave up 243 yards rushing. That's way too many yards rushing against a team that all they're going to do is rush on you, basically, or try to.
Once so Lenoris went down, Sellers went down with the ankle injury. Man, you talk about a team that was relying on him. And I don't think he's a great passer at this stage, but he's a 6'4", 230-pound guy. And, man, when he takes off with the football, you're in trouble.
He's the heart and soul of that offense and probably
you can
that
tell.
Football team. You can see
they
that.
Were never the same after
they
he
were
went
not,
down.
They were not the same, but they still was in the game. And they could have won the game and many opportunities to win the game. He even tried to come back in and play, but he just couldn't do it. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out for. But what I will say, too, is when Robbie came in to play, he made some terrible plays. He got stopped a few times, but he made some great plays. But I think those great plays were – because LSU was just out of position, or we just didn't have the right angle, or we didn't have the right pursuit, or something like that. But at the end of the day, I think it's we can't have those missed tackles. We got to play with heart. We got to play with passion. And I think the guys play with that. I just don't know what's the technique. Like, why are we missing these tackles? Why are we out of position sometimes?
And, Herb, sometimes the guy's right in
front of them.
And they can't bring them down. The other point of contention, we've talked about this since our first shows, is the fact that LSU special teams ain't nothing special about. Now, Xavier Thomas, I'll give him credit.
He's
about it. Yeah. In the special teams part of the game, Ramos, I don't blame him on the miss
because
that was a bad snap from center. But you can't have a blocked snap from center. You can't have a blocked punt, especially against Shane Beamer's team. Because look what his dad built the reputation on. Frank Beamer built that Virginia Tech program
on special teams and defense. That's right.
Beamer ball.
That's right. So to go back to the defense – had five sacks today. That's awesome. Keep that up. If they can continue that moving forward, we'll be fine. We just got to make some plays. When you start going to special teams and you're having botched snaps, you can't hold the ball, getting blocked kicks, things of that nature, that tells me it's an undisciplined team. That tells me we're not doing something right from Tuesday to Friday to make sure these guys are ready to play the game. Something's going on there. So How do you fix that? I think that's a coaching situation.
I was going to ask you that because with all these sort of being out of alignment situations, penalties, sort of the same mistakes over and over, you've got to point that finger at the coaching staff here.
You know what I see?
That's, to me, a lot of people don't like to do it.
No, that's
but,
what it
but
is.
But that's reality at this stage.
Well, the reality is the weeks – this game is proof in the pudding that we have the talent to win games. The talent really won that game. It's the ability of the guys and the want and that kind of stuff was what won that game. Now, when you start talking about those little brain fart, as we call them, penalties, useless that are just not provoked type of things that are happening, that reminds me of the tail end of Les Miles, the tail end of Coach O. All of those that's what that reminds me of. So it tells me some kind of way that we're not doing something Tuesday through Friday to get these guys prepared, and the culture of what we're doing is not as stringent as Alabama per se. It's not as stringent as Texas is playing, or Georgia, or somebody like that, where you don't see these guys making these kind of penalties that are not provoked, and having these mental breakdowns or having these fundamental breakdowns that are things that are just normal. What you do every day, all day long, is the same thing. There's nothing spectacular about it. Snap the ball, get it, put it down, kick the ball through the field goal. Done. I don't know why we can't do – I don't know why it's not second nature. I'm just not – I can't put my finger on it. But I can say this, though. I think it's coaching. I don't think it's 100%. And when I say it's coaching, it's not that they're not trying to coach the guys up. It's maybe what you're trying to do is not getting through to them. And how do you get through to them? Maybe you have to change your approach, adjust the way you speak to them, adjust the way the practices are, adjust the way you're trying to get them or coach them to do that specific skill.
I look at it, is there a running play that you can hang your hat on today for LSU?
Okay.
Is there a running play that you can hang your hat on? The answer is no.
You mean a running play that we can be successful at?
No, what I mean is that constantly wins for you.
Yeah, there is one, and we never do it. It's called
RPO. Okay, if you don't do it, then it's hidden.
That's right. Well, see, I don't know if it's hidden, but it's hidden in plain sight, right?
Okay.
How many times were we at the goal line at the 4th-and-2, 3rd-and-2, 2nd-and-2, 1st-and-2, whatever-and-2 at the goal line, or 3rd-and-2, and you need to get a first down? And we did this, hand the ball off and watch him run up the middle, and everybody's there, and no one's watching the quarterback. At least 7 times today, I can probably remember that. And so with that being said, to me, you pull that ball, you get 4 yards, you get down, you got a first down. If you're 3rd-and-2 at the goal line, you get 3 yards, you're a touchdown. If you get 2 yards, you got a touchdown. So when you ask me for a play, the play is there. I think
so the play is in the hands of the quarterback.
The execution of it is not there. It's in a situation like that. That's what I see, because if you go back, and because I'm gonna go back and watch the game tonight or tomorrow morning, and I know I will see the same thing I saw today, which is and last week and the week before, just pull the ball. They're not even concerned with Nussmeier running the ball. Just pull it one time, and you can get the first down and slide. I don't need you to run for 30 yards and 50 yards or outrun the whole D team or anything like. I just need you to get the first down so we can keep the drives going. It's weird because that's the only thing that I can say that is not a Nuss negative, but it's not really a negative because I don't think he's being taught to do that. I think the play is in the playbook, but it's more, hey, we want you to get rid of the ball. You get the ball, give the ball, give the ball.
I think you know why, because early on in this season, he's had success throwing it.
Yeah.
And so I think that you have to have that ability, and we're not asking him to be Jaden Daniels.
No.
There's only one guy like that. But I think we all see Jaden may have covered up a lot of weaknesses
100%.
Up front. Okay, it's all about ability, agility, flexibility. Man, Jaden had it all in the fact that he could run the football so well, and he developed into a very good downfield passer.
Yep.
But the elements missing is, okay, he rushed for over 1,100 yards last year. He had you on your heels every time he touched it because you were scared. He kind of had the doo-doo in the diaper.
That's right.
That he could take off running with the ball. I think they have to give Garrett that option because I think he's a good enough athlete to do that from time to time. I'm not asking him to rush for 1,100 yards, but you got to have that element not to have 11 guys converging on a running back.
I'm not asking him to do it on first and second down.
Correct.
I'm only asking you to do this on third and two, where you have an option for us to get a first down and get down. Or you're at the goal line, this is an option, and you can get in and score easily. It's there. It's always been there. And the reason why it's there is because he hasn't done it. He's done it once or twice this season. But the reason it's there is because they don't respect the fact that he's going to do it. And they don't need to, because we haven't shown, quite frankly, that we're going to do that. But if you ask me a question, that is the only play that I can hang my hat on and say this is it. Now,
the passing plays are different.
Well, the passing plays, he's been phenomenal. He's one of the top quarterbacks in the country. He can see the field.
He had one bad pass today.
He had that one pass, which was an intercept touchdown return that was called back. But I don't know if that was a bad pass because of not being able to make the decision. I mean, throwing the ball physically, it was a decision. It was. I don't know.
Now
what
he got
was
hit doing after the play.
He did.
So what we don't know is, did the receiver extend that route? Because he can make you look bad. Come on, it's happened to you.
He can. But what I saw was the problem was that he saw the field. And then from the center to the right side of the field, which is where he threw the ball, and center to the left side, the strength of the defense was on the right side.
Right.
He should have automatically come away from that. He could have looked to the right to kind of buy him some more time from the safety on the left-hand side, left hash, to pull him over a little bit, because Aaron Anderson was coming open going to the corner route on that. So I think that he just got fooled by the defense, and he didn't see what was actually happening. Not sure why he threw the ball the way he did. It was almost like he expected somebody to kind of run under the ball or something. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the thing. So I think that was a mental breakdown on this point. But outside of that, Nussmeier is not the problem.
No.
First of all, we have a problem, but it's not a problem. The problem is not with the players, I don't think. I think the problem is with the culture and what we're doing and how do we – and I say culture, and I want to use that word loosely. I don't want to use that as like, oh, the culture is on fire. I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is there's some things we got to clean up. It's an ugly win. It was beautiful at the same time because it's a win against South Carolina on the road at 11 o'clock, which LSU generally doesn't do. But we ended up squeaking out a win in a tough environment with in a lackluster way. And so I'm going to take that all day long. But what I do know is we need to clean up the senseless penalties. We need to clean up the fundamental acts that are just simple to do on a day-by-day or game-by-game basis. And I think we're going to be fine. I really do. I think that we have an opportunity to be a good football team. Great football team? No. Good? Yes.
Next week you play another. I think South Carolina is a more physical team than UCLA. I would look at them as more of a finesse team. And just the way they've played in the past.
Yeah.
I know one thing. Charbonnet is not on that team, because when Coach Odenall started that season right after Ida, man, Charbonnet, he's still running there trying to tackle him.
He was impressive, wasn't he?
Man, he's a man out there on that field.
I watched him the rest of the year, and he did the same thing to everybody.
To everybody.
So it wasn't just us. I get it. No, he was great. So UCLA is coming in. I hope we don't go into this game with the same mindset as USC. Oh, USC is a not physical team. They're a finesse team. They're going to da-da-da-da-da. Well, we get out there, and they were very, very physical. We underestimated who they were on defense. We underestimated their physicality up front on the offensive side of the ball. And so this is going to be interesting, because UCLA comes to town, and this is going to be, in my mind, a huge game for LSU football. It's not an SEC game, but it is a game that can make up for the USC loss, but also a game that can say, okay, we're 2-1 right now. How can we go 3-1?
I agree with you. And, you know, listen, we've been through a long summer, and they got some really hot days. I just hope they got one real hot one left, and that is Saturday afternoon. And people say, oh, UCLA, they used to play in hot weather. Not this kind of heat.
Not this kind of heat.
And humidity. They're not used to that.
They're used to playing in sunshiny weather, but not hot.
Yeah, exactly. And the Tulane Green Wave have cut into Oklahoma's lead. It is 24-19. They had a pickoff go in for 6 points and a touchdown for the Green Wave.
Nice.
They tried to go for 2 points, failed two-point conversion. So, Oklahoma is just starting the fourth quarter, has a 24-19 lead over the Green Wave. And, man, early on, Oklahoma was chewing them up.
They were.
Throwing the football. And now Tulane has made a run of this, 24-19 with 14 minutes, 20 seconds left in the fourth quarter. We'll be back with more of our Purple and Gold Point After Show, presented by MAP Construction. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. We'll be back with more Purple and Gold Point After right after this break. We're back here at our Purple and Gold Point After Show. Mike, to tell you along with the legendary Herb Tyler.
That's right, legendary.
Legendary. He likes when I say that. And our segment is presented by MAP Construction. MAP Built, Build Beyond. Come on by and visit
us. West Bank legendary.
He's legendary. Legendary defensive back, quarterback.
All the backs.
He's all the backfield, all in one shot. We had Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Talking about LSU's 36-33 victory over South Carolina. It wasn't pretty by any aspect, but it's a W.
But it's beautiful.
When you win, it's a win. Nothing about style points, but there are some things to clean up.
That's right.
Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Terry and Slidell. Terry, you're in the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Yeah, I got a question. I heard y'all was saying about, man, design some runs for Nuss to come out the backfield. Okay, wow, that's a really great thing. Since Nussmeier is the only quarterback that's seen more than one series in his whole career, who are you going to have? The two backup quarterbacks have a total of about 10 snaps? At least when Jalen Daniels got hurt in the championship game in Georgia, Nussmeier came in and played. He played last year. You've got two quarterbacks that it don't get hurt. Look what happened to the South Carolina day when their starter went down. Their team went totally the dogs. Okay, you get Nussmeier out the game, you think we're a bad football team now? We'll be a 10-time worse football team.
Yeah, but Terry, you can't think
that.
You can't, Terry.
If you get hurt,
You can't think like that. You got to think about winning games. What's going to win you games? We're not talking about him.
Winning games. If Nussmeier goes down, who you got? You got two freshman quarterbacks that have never seen the field. So, Nussmeier, run a couple times, Terry. You need, and we're going to go with freshman quarterback.
Terry, let's disagree with you. Well, let's put it in context. Let's make sure we understand what we were talking about. What we were talking about was a down and distance specific situational football is what we were talking about. We weren't talking about running Nussmeier like on first down, second down.
Yeah, talking about running him like Jaden.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. We were only talking about a third and two.
I understand what you're saying, but it's still an iffy situation. If he gets hurt, we're a bad football team now. We're going to be a worse football team if he goes down, because that defense is supposed to be so much better. The defense is just as bad as it was last year. We still can't run the football.
There's no difference
between this football team and last year.
Yeah, we understand that. And we, at the end of the day, football is football. Every snap, you can get hurt. You can get hurt running off the field, injured for the end of the season. But we're just saying, in certain situations, when you really need a first down or you really need a score,
because they're not expecting
that particular situation. So we need to at least allow him one or two of those situations per game or plays, so that he can get a first down, touchdown, or whatever it may be. That's it, Terry.
We agree with you about that. They have no experience other than Swan, who played at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
But I think what we're trying to say is there are some built-in plays that maybe a couple times in a game that you could use Nuss, because no one's expecting him to run
the ball. That's it, Terry. We're not talking about designing where he's running the ball 10 to 15 times a game. We're talking 2 to 3 at the most. That's it. Because you're right. He is the most experienced and the best quarterback on the team. You're absolutely right.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate the call. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Gene and Marrera. Gene, in the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Hi. How you doing? I'm always excited. I haven't talked to you guys for a long time.
How you doing, Gene?
I'm happy. I'm doing fine. Doing really well. Trying to stay strong. And I'm always excited for LSU to win. I'm very happy for them. And they're still doing better.
That's absolutely correct. We're excited too.
Me too. I just want to make y'all happy for me to say that.
All right,
I'm
Jeannie.
I'm afraid for LSU, and I'm afraid for you, Mike Dettelier.
All right.
And Tyler, you're doing good, too.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. We're smiling ear to ear over here. You ought to see it.
And it's much better with a W than a L.
That's right.
That's all I know.
That's right.
God bless y'all.
Thank you, Gene.
Yes, ma'am.
We appreciate the call. We're going to be come back with more of our Purple and Gold Point After Show presented by Map Construction. Map Built, Build Beyond. We're at 3535 Perkins Road, Acme Orchard House. Come on by and visit us. Hey, you can come in here. Got some great food and drink specials. Also, we have a deal where you could fill in and get you some Acme gift cards. Also, some Acme swag right in front of us here at our WWL booth. We'll be back with more Purple and Gold Point After right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Purple and Gold Point After Show. Mike Dettelier along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Orchard House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. They got a lot of great food and drink specials here. Also, you can register to win some swag here from Acme and also gift cards from Acme also. And we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Map Built, Build Beyond. Herb, let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Don in Lakeview. Don,
let's go, Don.
In the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Herb.
Go yes, Tigers. Don. Go Tigers.
I had two questions. One.
Okay.
What's going on with our offensive line? It was supposed to be our biggest strength.
Yeah.
Because the middle, they could not move. I don't think they could move a bale of hay. I mean, or anything. They couldn't move anything today. And they were getting blown up all the time. Number two, Harold Perkins. I like when they started bringing him more often, particularly in that last series. But it seems like that, you know, the defensive coordinator using him in ways creatively. I love when they drop the defensive end into the flat and confused, you know, the quarterback, you know, from South Carolina. I mean, there's got to be ways that you can use him to disguise him more coming off the edge, which seems like he's stronger coming off the edge than even in the middle. And then thirdly, more of a comment, I don't understand why we don't have the discipline. Pre-snap penalties, things like this, all that stuff just puts us behind the chains.
Yep.
I used to live – thank you so much for the call, Don. Appreciate it. I'll answer your last question first. So I live right next to a former NFL major college coach for – geez, he coached for over 50 years. He passed away a little over a year ago. And Joe Clark, and Joe used to tell me it's not sometimes what you teach, but how you teach them. Because you got to be able to relate that they understand.
That's right.
It's not that you're not being taught right.
That's right.
But are you teaching them in a manner in which they understand it?
Yep.
And he said, Mike, that's the biggest thing to me in coaching. He said, when I got out, it's a new generation of you've got to be able to sell them and understand, have them understand what you are trying to teach them as a coach.
Yep.
Because sometimes it gets lost in translation.
It does. So you have to speak to be understood, and you have to listen to understand. So, and if you don't do any of those in that combination like we just talked about, it won't be successful. Now, the other thing about that is also it's the delivery thereof. It's a new age person. You know, back in the days, if a coach said something, everybody's ears perked up, and they were listening, they were paying attention. Now a coach might be saying something, they're thinking about TikTok or Instagram. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it is definitely something to do with the delivery of how we're getting our point across and if we're doing a good job or not. And I think that's an evaluation that the coaching staff has to do. Now, when you go to the offensive line question that he asked about, it's so difficult to put a finger on it. But what I will tell you is, I think that is a combination there of either backs not seeing, because just because you don't get to push up the middle doesn't mean that the back isn't supposed to bounce it out left or right, whatever gap hole it needs to go to. And then the other thing is, what is the scheme? What are they really trying to do? And it's so difficult to understand what they're trying to do because they're not doing anything. it's just weird. It's like just a cluster of guys in the middle and not getting any push. So I think that's something that they're working on and have to reevaluate.
And today, you and I talked about this. Some of Caden's yardage came off the fact.
Yeah,
he almost like runs up the back of somebody, and then he takes off.
And then bounces out.
Nobody grabbed him. And so, you know, Caden took off, and Caden's fast. And so, man, once he gets that 1 foot down, he can break away from people.
Yep.
But it wasn't like it was gaping holes for Caden Durham.
Well, I think had he had the vision to see to cut prior to running into the back of, then maybe there was a lane to run through. And you know as well as I know, Mike, the lane doesn't have to be gaping. It just needs to open and close. And you have to be there when it opens so you get through it and you're there. What was the third question that he asked?
About Harold Perkins.
About Harold Perkins, yeah.
And my thing about it is, and I heard Kurt Herbstreit talk about this, developing him for the NFL. Man, my thing is, let the NFL fool with him. I'm here to win games as a college coach. He is better out on the edge. And one thing I give Perkins, when he's done much better than he was as a freshman, they didn't use him much. Man, he can drop back in coverage. But we saw Braden Swenson do the exact same thing.
Right.
But his forte is getting off the edge, getting into the backfield, causing havoc.
That's right.
He's never going to be this guy that's going to be able to take on or get around big people up front. But if what Herbstreit says, we're developing him for the NFL, man, I'm worried about developing him what's going to win me games at LSU.
So
let the NFL worry about that.
So Harold Perkins Jr. had 2 solo tackles and 1 tackle for loss, right? That's it, totaling 3 tackles. Another linebacker had 11 total tackles, 8 solos, and then some assists. So the other linebacker was Weeks, who's a younger guy who understands that position of linebacker, I think, a little bit better than Harold does. And what I think Harold needs to do is not just what Harold needs to do, but the coaching staff has to just put him on the edge and let him rush. They need to let him go make a play. Because dropping back in coverage, just because you're the best coverage linebacker we have, doesn't allow you to make plays. You're not making any plays doing that. Everybody, if they're not throwing the ball your way and you're dropping back, I guess you would be great, right? But he needs to be active around the football and make plays, because that's what he does. He can create tackles for loss. He can create fumbles. He can cause havoc. He can recover fumbles and things of that nature. And he's a guy that's a playmaker. We have to figure this out. And I don't know why it's so difficult. I've never seen such a
– Okay.
Even if we put him in a situation like they do the Honey Badger back when he played at LSU, just put him as – like disguise him as a nickel type of player and let him rush.
And you think about it. In year one, as an 18-year-old freshman, man – he put the fear of you-know-what in you every time he come off that edge. Now, again, people say, yeah, they ran at him when they played A&M, but what about the other games?
Yeah.
Nobody else had figured that out. And, again, though, I think this is what you go back to. What's best for your team today? And my thing for LSU is to put him in a position where he can cause havoc. Now, he didn't get a lot of numbers today. But if you watch how they were trying to block him,
right.
He set up somebody else.
He set up Swenson.
They were so scared of him coming off the edge, it set up a Braden to make a play. And I really think that is something, if you put him closer to the line of scrimmage as a pass rusher, other teams are going to – he's going to open it up for other guys to make plays.
Yeah, now look, you and I are talking, and we're behind the table at the most one of the most greatest restaurants ever, Acme. We're not in the, you know, the coaching booth and on the field every day trying to tell them what to do. I know for a fact that the coaches are trying to figure out exactly what to do. It's just the fact of the matter, it just doesn't look the same as it did 2 years ago, because you're not hearing his name called as much. But like today, you're right, where his impact in the game was quiet, but it was huge because other people made plays. And I think that's a part of how you utilize him as well, too, because just because he's not, it's like a decoy as a receiver, and you can you know take the top off the defense and then have somebody come underneath and catch the touchdown pass, and it's great.
You look at Braden Swenson, 3 sacks today, but one of the plays, you saw the quarterback. He didn't even see Braden fall back in coverage. And listen, if Braden had better hands, he might have caught it.
He would have
been an interception. Because he threw it right to him. He had no idea that Braden took one step forward and then he dropped back. And, man, he didn't expect Braden Swenson to be in that spot where he could have easily picked off the ball. Again, I know why he's playing on defense today, but God bless him. Braden Swenson had one heck of a game today.
He did.
Because not only did he make plays, but he was relentless.
He was.
He just kept coming at you, and forced you to do some things from a pass block standpoint. Now, who are we going to kind of chip a little bit? Will it be Braden or will it be Harrell?
Right.
So he put that in the back of your mind.
So I like the motor that Braden played with today. And I think Weeks played the same way as he always played.
Oh, always.
And we don't give him enough credit and notoriety that we should be. But that kid was the best defensive player stat-wise today on the field. And it's not – and I'm talking Will Weeks, too. It's not that – or Whit Weeks, I'm sorry. He jumped off the screen or anything, but he played a solid football game. He's going to be that way from now until the end of the season. So I just hope some of those other guys that kind of that was making some business decisions start thinking like Whit and Braden and Harrell and start making some plays and start, creating somewhat of just make a tackle. How about that? Because, I mean, sometimes we saw where it was just – what are you doing? Why are you out there, right? So, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to get better.
Let's go back to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. I think we got Jim on the line. Jim, you're in the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Yeah, can you hear me, guys?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure can.
Well, I'm kind of on the same theme as some of the previous callers about. I want to know about some of the play calling. LSU had it down on about the 2 yard line, goal to go, and they tried it up the middle, no go. I'm thinking, up the middle again, no go. Three times, I'm thinking you've got to be kidding me. Fake up the middle, quick to the left, quick
That's
pass,
right.
or quick,
Yeah.
Third and the fourth time, Nussmeier, I think. Dashed out to the right and tried a desperation pass, and the receiver was out of bounds, and it wouldn't have been a touchdown anyway. Like, to me, this is not the players. This is coaching something.
That's right. Yep.
What do you guys think about this? What do you think about the play calling, some of that?
I don't like what they do in the red zone. I'll be honest with you. I think they moved the football 20-20. It seems to be that they don't have a couple plays that they feel real comfortable with.
No, not down low.
Not in the red zone near the goal line. They really don't. And I agree with you, Jim, totally. I think that area of LSU's offense needs to get much better because you see their ability to move the football from somebody's 20 to their 20.
Yep.
It's what happens after that. That's the real issue.
Well, I think like what Jim's talking about is exactly it, and it reminds me of the old Les Miles stubbornness. I think it's just a matter of they're thinking that hey, we're bigger, we're better, we're more physical than you are. We're gonna just manhandle you. Well, you don't have to overthink this thing.
Yep.
And sometimes when you overthink it like that, and that's not really overthinking it. That's just really being, I guess just way too confident or thinking something's going to change and it won't change, right? But you keep doing the same thing. At the end of the day, I think it's just a matter of just make a simple, I know they have probably 10 plays in their arsenal, in that playbook, that they could have run other than those three plays that Jim was talking about. And also other than that fourth play where Nuss rolled out way before they ran any of those plays. It's just a matter of they know that Nuss is not going to run the ball. They also know that they're going to run the ball straight up the middle, and then the guys are going to run right at the back of the center, the guard, or the other guard, and they're not going to be able to look outside of that plane and try to bounce the ball. Like, how many times have you seen Emmitt Smith or somebody, and I'm bringing up old names, but those guys, you would see, they would see nothing's there, and they bounce it to the outside. They didn't run up the back of anybody. Like, I don't understand what's with this new age thing that we've been seeing with the new football thing. you know, running into the back of people. But
okay, I told you that this morning. I told you, I see it. You see more and more of it, almost like they run to the back,
yeah,
and they're running into the back of a lineman, and then all of a sudden they want to try to take off with it once, almost like contact. And then they want to,
yeah,
it causes almost like a rugby jam,
that's right, that's
so
right
to speak. But that's not going to work.
No.
Every once in a while, and I give Caden credit today, because if you meet Caden Durham, he's not the biggest cat in the world.
No.
But, man, he was able to come out of there, and I agree with you, Herb. He had a couple shots that had he taken that a little bit more to the edge, he's got a crease that he,
yeah,
can run through.
Right, right. And, look, I play with the best, so I know what that looks like, right? I've handed the ball off to Kevin Falk, Rondell Mealy, Cecil Collins, Kendall Cleveland. I've watched these guys from right behind them and see what they see. And I know and understand how that works. And it's I think it's a little bit of a stubbornness when you get down the goal line and you just run the ball three times right down the center of the field when you're not pushing anybody around. Especially when you know you have not pushed anybody around yet this season. I think it's a little bit of stuff.
That's where I really agree with you, that if you'd have had success doing that, I understand doing
it. Yeah, I get it.
But if you're not having success, man, why you keep beating your head against the concrete wall? You don't think it's going to hurt?
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely going to hurt. Now, at the end of the day, too, in my mind, I'm thinking, what different play can we do now that will be successful that no one knows is coming? What can we do? Can we?
And that's when you brought up about the Nussmeier faking it. And we're back here on our Purple and Gold Point After Show. Mike DeTille along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. They got a lot of great food and drink specials here. Also, you can register to win some swag here from Acme and also gift cards from Acme also. And we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Map Built, Build Beyond. Herb, let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Let's go to Don in Lakeview. Don,
let's go, Don,
in the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Herb.
Go, yes,
Tigers.
Don.
Go Tigers.
I had two questions. One.
Okay.
What's going on with our offensive line? It was supposed to be our biggest strength.
Yeah.
Because the middle, they could not move. I don't think they could move a bale of hay. I mean, or anything. They couldn't move anything today. And they were getting blown up all the time. Number two, Harold Perkins. I like when they started bringing him more often, particularly in that last series. But it seems like that, you know, the defensive coordinator using him in ways creatively. I love when they dropped the defensive end into the flat and confused, you know, the quarterback, yep, you know, from South Carolina. I mean, there's got to be ways that you can use him to disguise him more coming off the edge, which seems like he's stronger coming off the edge than even in the middle. And then thirdly, more of a comment, I don't understand why we don't have the discipline. Pre-snap penalties, things like this, all, yep, that stuff just puts us behind the chains.
Yep.
I used to live, thank you so much for the call, Don. Appreciate it. I'll answer your last question first. So I live right next to a former NFL major college coach for, geez, he coached for over 50 years. He passed away a little over a year ago, and Joe Clark. And Joe used to tell me it's not sometimes what you teach, but how you teach them. Because you got to be able to relate that they understand.
That's right.
It's not that you're not being taught right.
That's right.
But are you teaching them in a manner in which they understand it?
Yep.
And he said, Mike, that's the biggest thing to me in coaching. He said, when I got out, it's a new generation of you've got to be able to sell them and understand, have them understand what you are trying to teach them, yep, as a coach.
Yep.
Because sometimes it gets lost in translation.
It does. So you have to speak to be understood, and you have to listen to understand. So, and if you don't do any of those in that combination like we just talked about, it won't be successful. Now, the other thing about that is also it's the delivery thereof. It's a new age person. You know, back in the days, If a coach said something, everybody's ears perked up, and they were listening, they were paying attention. Now a coach might be saying something they're thinking about TikTok or Instagram. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it is definitely something to do with the delivery of how we're getting our point across and if we're doing a good job or not. And I think that's an evaluation that the coaching staff has to do. Now, when you go to the offensive line question that he asked about, it's so difficult to put a finger on it. But what I will tell you is I think that is a combination there of either backs not seeing – because just because you don't get the push up the middle doesn't mean that the back isn't supposed to bounce it out left or right, whatever gap hole he needs to go to. And then the other thing is, what is the scheme? What are they really trying to do? And it's so difficult to understand what they're trying to do because they're not doing anything. It's just weird. It's like just a cluster of guys in the middle and not getting any push. So I think that's something that they're working on and have to reevaluate.
And today, you and I talked about this. Some of Caden's yardage came off the fact.
Yeah,
he almost like runs up the back of somebody, and then he takes off.
And then bounces out.
Nobody grabbed him. And so, you know, Caden took off, and Caden's fast. And so, man, once he gets that 1 foot down, he can break away from people. Yep. But it wasn't like it was gaping holes for Caden Durham.
Well, I think had the vision to see to cut prior to running into the back of, then maybe there was a lane to run through. And you know as well as I know, Mike, the lane doesn't have to be gaping. It just needs to open and close. And you have to be there when it opens so you get through it and you're there. What was the third question that he asked?
About Harold Perkins.
About Harold Perkins, yeah.
And my thing about it is, and I heard Kurt Herbstreit talk about this, developing him for the NFL. Man, my thing is, let the NFL fool with him. I'm here to win games as a college coach. He is better out on the edge. And one thing I'll give Perkins, when he's done much better than he was as a freshman, they didn't use him much. Man, he can drop back in coverage. But we saw Braden Swinson do the exact same thing.
Right.
But his forte is getting off the edge, getting into the backfield, causing havoc.
That's right.
He's never going to be this guy that's going to be able to take on or get around big people up front. But if what Herbstreit says, we're developing him for the NFL, man, I'm worried about developing and what's going to win me games at LSU.
So
let the NFL worry about that.
So Harold Perkins Jr. had 2 solo tackles and 1 tackle for loss, right? That's it, totaling 3 tackles. Another linebacker had 11 total tackles, 8 solos, and then some assists. So the other linebacker was Weeks, who's a younger guy who understands that position of linebacker, I think, a little bit better than Harold does. And what I think Harold needs to do is not just what Harold needs to do, but the coaching staff has to just put him on the edge and let him rush. They need to let him go make a play. Because dropping back in coverage, just because you're the best coverage linebacker we have, doesn't allow you to make plays. You're not making any plays doing that. Everybody, if they're not throwing the ball your way and you're dropping back, I guess you would be great, right? But he needs to be active around the football and make plays, because that's what he does. He can create tackles for loss. He can create fumbles. He can cause havoc. He can recover fumbles and things of that nature. And he's a guy that's a playmaker. We have to figure this out. And I don't know why it's so difficult. I've never seen such a
– okay.
Even if we put him in a situation like they do the Honey Badger back when he played at LSU, just put him as – like disguise him as a nickel type of player and let him rush.
And you think about it. In year one, as an 18-year-old freshman, man – he put the fear of you-know-what in you every time he come off that edge. Now, again, people say, they ran at him when they played A&M, but what about the other games?
Yeah.
Nobody else had figured that out. And, again, though, I think this is what you go back to. What's best for your team today? And my thing for LSU is to put him in a position where he can cause havoc. Now, he didn't get a lot of numbers today. But if you watch how they were trying to block him,
right.
He set up somebody else.
He set up Swinson.
They were so scared of him coming off the edge, it set up a Braden to make a play. And I really think that is something, if you put him closer to the line of scrimmage as a pass rusher, other teams are going to – he's going to open it up for other guys to make plays.
Yeah, now look, you and I are talking, and we're behind the table at the most one of the most greatest restaurants ever, Acme. We're not in the coaching booth and on the field every day trying to tell him what to do. I I know for a fact that the coaches are trying to figure out exactly what to do. It's just the fact of the matter, it just doesn't look the same as it did 2 years ago because you're not hearing his name called as much. But like today, you're right, where his impact in the game was quiet, but it was huge because other people made plays. And I think that's a part of how you utilize him as well, too. Because just because he's not, it's like a decoy as a receiver, and you can you know take the top off the defense, and then have somebody come underneath and catch the touchdown pass, and it's great.
You look at Braden Swinson, 3 sacks today, but one of the plays you saw the quarterback. He didn't even see Braden fall back in coverage, and listen, if Braden had better hands, he might have caught it.
He would have
been an interception. Because he threw it right to him. He had no idea that Braden took one step forward and then he dropped back. And, man, he didn't expect Braden Swinson to be in that spot where he could have easily picked off the ball. Again, I know why he's playing on defense today, but God bless him. Braden Swinson had one heck of a game today.
He did.
Because not only did he make plays, but he was relentless.
He was.
He just kept coming at you and forced you to do some things. From a pass block standpoint, now, who are we going to kind of chip a little bit? Will it be Braden or will it be Harrell?
Right.
So he put that in the back of your mind.
So I like the motor that Braden played with today. And I think Weeks played the same way as he always played.
Oh, always.
And we don't give him enough credit and notoriety that we should be. But that kid was the best defensive player stat-wise today on the field. And it's not – and I'm talking Will Weeks, too. It's not that – or with Weeks, I'm sorry. It's not that he jumped off the screen or anything, but he played a solid football game. He's going to be that way from now until the end of the season. So I just hope some of those other guys that kind of that was making some business decisions start thinking like Witt and Braden and Harrell and start making some plays and start, creating somewhat of just make a tackle. How about that? Because, I mean, sometimes we saw where it was just, what are you doing? Why are you out there, right? So, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to get better.
Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. I think we got Jim on the line. Jim, you're in the huddle with Mike and Herb.
Yeah, can you hear me, guys?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure can.
Well, I'm kind of on the same theme as some of the previous callers about – I want to know about some of the play calling. LSU had it down on about the 2 yard line, goal to go, and they tried it up the middle. No go. I'm thinking, up the middle again. No go. 3 times. I'm thinking you've got to be kidding me. Fake up the middle, quick to the left. Quick
That's
pass,
right.
A quick,
Yeah.
Third and the fourth time, Nussmeier, I think, dashed out to the right and tried a desperation pass, and it, the receiver was out of bounds, and it wouldn't have been a touchdown anyway. Like, to me, this is not the players. This is coaching something.
That's right. Yep.
What do you guys think about this? What do you think about the play calling, some of that?
I don't like what they do in the red zone. I'll be honest with you. I think they moved the football 20-20.
Yeah,
but after that, it seems to be that they don't have a couple plays that they feel real comfortable with.
No, not down low.
Not in the red zone near the goal line. They really don't. And I agree with you, Jim, totally. I think that area of LSU's offense needs to get much better because you see their ability to move the football from somebody's 20 to their 20.
Yep.
It's what happens after that. That's the real issue.
Well, I think like what Jim's talking about is exactly it. And it reminds me of the old Les Miles stubbornness. I think it's just a matter of they're thinking that, hey, we're bigger, we're better, we're more physical than you are, we're gonna just manhandle you. Well, you don't have to overthink this thing.
Yep.
And sometimes when you overthink it like that, and that's not really overthinking it. That's just really being, just way too confident or thinking something's going to change and it won't change, right? But you keep doing the same thing. At the end of the day, I think it's just a matter of just make a simple, there's I know they have probably 10 plays in their arsenal, in that playbook, that they could have run other than those three plays that Jim was talking about. And also other than that fourth play where Nuss rolled out way before they ran any of those plays. It's just a matter of they know that Nuss is not going to run the ball. They also know that they're going to run the ball straight up the middle, and then the guys are going to run right at the back of the center, the guard, or the other guard, and they're not going to be able to look outside of that plane and try to bounce the ball. Like, how many times have you seen Emmitt Smith or somebody, and I'm bringing up old names, but those guys, you would see, they would see nothing's there, and they bounce it to the outside. They didn't run up the back of anybody. Like, I don't understand what's with this new age thing that we've been seeing with the new football thing, you know, running into the back of people. But
I told you that this morning. Crazy. I see it. You see more and more of it, almost like they run to the back,
yeah,
and they're running into the back of a lineman, and then all of a sudden they want to try to take off with it once, it, almost like contact. And then they want to,
yeah.
It causes almost like a rugby jam,
that's right. That's
so
right.
to speak. But that's not going to work.
No.
Every once in a while, and I give Caden credit today, because if you meet Caden Durham, he's not the biggest cat in the world.
No.
But, man, he was able to come out of there, and I agree with you, Herb. He had a couple shots that had he taken that a little bit more to the edge, he's got a crease that he can run through.
Right, right. And, look, I played with the best, so I know what that looks like, right? I've handed the ball off to Kevin Falk, Rondell Mealy, Cecil Collins, Kendall Cleveland. I've watched these guys from right behind them and see what they see. And I know and understand how that works. And it's. I think it's a little bit of a stubbornness when you get down the goal line and you just run the ball three times right down the center of the field when you're not pushing anybody around. Especially when you know you have not pushed anybody around yet this season. I think it's a little bit of stuff.
That's where I really agree with you, that if you'd have had success doing that, I understand doing
it. Yeah, I get it.
But if you're not having success, man, why you keep beating your head against the concrete wall? You don't think it's going to hurt?
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely going to hurt. Now, at the end of the day, too, in my mind, I'm thinking, what different play can we do now that will be successful that no one knows is coming? What can we do? Can we?
And that's when you brought up about the Nussmeier faking it and pulling it and run with it. We're not talking about him running 15 times a game.
No.
We're talking about a couple times a game, especially in that red zone area.
In that
area.
Red zone or that short yardage situation. And just get down after that. That's it.
Thank you, Jim. We appreciate the call. We'll be back with more of our Purple and Gold Point After Show right here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. We'll be back to finish it off here on our Purple and Gold Point After Show right after this break. We're finishing up here at our Purple and Gold Point After Show presented by Map Construction. Map Bill Beyond, want to thank Map Construction. Always
right.
been a great part of our pregame and point after show. Also to Acme Oyster House. Jason and the crew here, they do a fantastic job treating everybody.
They
great
sure
hospitality.
Do.
You got super food and drink specials here and surround TVs. Man, you can watch all of the games at one shot. So come on by and visit. Herb, I'm going to give it to you last. Going into the UCLA game this coming Saturday, and we'll find out the exact time.
Yeah.
I think sometime tomorrow with UCLA. A win's a win. Now,
That's
you'd
it.
Like to see it a lot cleaner than what you saw today.
That's right.
But in the bottom line is you got to figure out a way to win and try to clean up some of the errors
That's
that
right.
this football team has made like in three straight games. You cannot have that continue because when you go play the big boys
That's
come
right.
October, November, you're going to have some issues.
We just need to have some Fabuloso out there on the practice field and so we can clean this thing up. That's it. We just need to take our times and be sharp and make it happen. That's it. Win the football game.
We'll be back next week with more Purple and Gold right here on the Big 870 WWL.